It is 5:06 on the Central Coast on this Friday, December 6th, 2019. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio. This is what I have planned for you at the bottom of the hour after news. We're going to have the Jingle Bells here. Donna Jones, Linda Wilson, Terry Kahn. Very talented singers. We're going to get you in the holiday spirit as you head downtown to the Christmas parade. And then during the 6 o'clock hour, Craig and I will welcome your phone calls on Last Call or Friday Night Open Line, whatever's on your mind we can talk about. Mr. Science is sticking around a little bit because of his interest in this subject. Bruce Curtis is here. Bruce, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. I'm a longtime science fiction fan, as you probably knew.
Yep. Which is, you reached out to me and suggested that we spend a little bit of time talking about DC Fontana. And I'm not going to pretend that I knew a lot about her. I certainly knew her name watching credits on Star Trek and different shows. Very prominent TV writer. But one of the first women to break into science fiction.
Indeed, she was.
In terms of TV. Her real name was Dorothy C. Fontana?
Dorothy Catherine Fontana.
All right. Give us the overview.
I've always thought that I liked her scripts the best long before I knew she was a she, because DC Fontana, just first blush, it's science fiction, it must be a guy.
Yeah.
Those were the prejudices we all had back in the day, probably still do, because unfortunately science fiction, there's a better term for it they're using these days, and I can't remember it.
Speculative fiction.
Thank you.
Speculative?
Yes. Speculative fiction.
It includes sci-fi, fantasy, and other things.
Thank you, Alan. I appreciate that. Mr. Science rises to the occasion for me and my failed brain power.
You didn't stump him.
No, I didn't. Okay. Water. We'll talk about that. I still think that's worth another $5.
Come back to DC Fontana.
Okay. She died Tuesday, age 80. She broke through the glass ceiling in a male-dominated cohort of Hollywood screenwriters and the equally male-dominated science fiction field. And you can go back and look at her youth. She'd been a writer for years. She'd written novels. She worked on short stories from as young as she could remember before coming to Hollywood.
Yeah, now, but when she came to Hollywood.
When she came to Hollywood.
She had the degree from a secretarial certificate.
Yes, and that was one of her first jobs. But believe it or not, she had written screenplays, teleplays, and sold them, and they were produced before she got hired as a secretary. 2013, she interviewed about the fact there are very few women working in the action-adventure speculative fiction drama. See, I actually had that written down here. It didn't bother me. When she began to get noticed. In fact, there were many, not many women working as writers in Hollywood. You had a few. They were outliers, trailblazers. They worked on soap operas and variety shows. And even there, they encountered opposition. They were not given much opportunity, unfortunately.
So she was originally Dorothy Fontana, Dorothy C. Fontana, and she changed her name to DC Fontana.
Very early in, she decided to do that because she knew it would help her get recognition and get jobs that she wouldn't otherwise get. And that's a shame she had
to. We're talking about the 1960s, right, Bruce?
1960s.
Yeah.
The Writers Guild of America says today in Hollywood, approximately 36% of scripts are written by women. So, mid-1960s, we'll set up the drama. She had written a couple of shows, several scripts for different TV shows we'll get into. Roddenberry's proposing a new TV show, space opera. It's called Star Trek. He'd been in Hollywood working as a screenwriter. He'd been an airline pilot and a cop. He'd done a little bit of everything in his life. But being a policeman is what really stirred up his creative juices. And so he came along with a show before he got to Star Trek, which he called Wagon Train to the Stars. People were into anthology TV shows in the day. Wagon Train was kind of that.
Yeah.
You had one underlying premise, and then they built the show story around that.
Well, that's how they pitched it
to
skeptical executives.
Yes, because
who wants a space show? Well, it's not a space show. It's Wagon Train to the Stars.
Yeah, and that's something a network executive could relate to, because in those days, creative people didn't view network decision makers in the most positive light, shall we say?
Yeah, but DC Fontana was working mostly as a personal assistant secretary in Hollywood in the early 1960s.
She was.
She'd come out west to find fame and fortune or whatever, and she was a secretary to men.
Unfortunately, she ended up in that specialized jobs as secretaries, but executive assistants, any way you want to put it. So let me see, what happened? I'm trying to remember. What she did is that she recognized when she heard about Roddenberry and heard about the story, she thought, I want to be a part of that. When Roddenberry was at MGM, she worked there in another capacity and saw a notice for a job to work for one of Roddenberry's assistants as a secretary. So she grabbed the job. That's how she met Gene.
Because my understanding was that Roddenberry had an assistant or a secretary who was out sick.
Yeah,
and he needed a temporary replacement.
Yeah, it was a couple of months on basically an infected appendectomy.
And Dorothy Fontana got the gig, but when the woman came back to work, Roddenberry wanted to keep DC Fontana around.
Yes, because she was cultivating the relationship. And Gene, I think that, but the best way to put it, I think that Star Trek's staying power, its success, comes down to something that most people won't recognize. They'll say it was the quality of the actors, maybe, the inspiration of Gene Roddenberry. I think it always came down, maybe Alan can debate it, to the idea that he could identify and select superior quality writers.
Sure. Alan?
Well, and you have what really drove Star Trek was not the special effects, it was the relationship between the main characters. And that carried on from week to week. That requires not only the acting, but does require the script writing that brings out their strengths.
Which is one of the things that Leonard Nimoy has said about DC Fontana, is that she was critical in the evolution of the character of Mr. Spock.
She was. She created much of the base persona around an episode called Journey to Babel, where we're introduced to his parents, a couple of veteran Hollywood actors. And, of course, they developed, being the pros, the wonderful people they were, they developed the relationship between Spock and them. That was Mark Leonard and Jane Wyman. I want to say June Lockhart. I could be wrong.
It's Jane Wyman.
Is it Jane Wyman? Okay. Yeah. I always thought it was June Lockhart. Okay, there you go.
Lost in Space was going at the time.
Yeah, she was Lost in Space.
She was.
Yeah, I know she wasn't Lost in Space. But I always thought of her, that's Lassie's mom, so it must be her. And I guess it was wrong. But anyway,
she created
this wonderful tension.
Bruce is going to get here anytime now.
I have had cancer. My brain doesn't work anymore. You guys know this.
Before that, I don't know what his excuse was, but yeah. Bruce and I have known each other long enough, I can say
Alan,
that.
What's the impact of Star Trek, the TV series?
You had serious science fiction. Before that, you had Lost in Space started the year before that. You also had things like Johnny Quest, which I loved, and some of the other things. But here is one that did take the issue seriously.
Yes.
What would happen if we go into space? How would we relate to other people? Things like the Prime Directive, other issues that had to be dealt with.
DC Fontana was with Star Trek for the first 2 years full-time on staff. She was a story editor.
Yeah, she left under not the best circumstances. I thought about bringing that up. I just didn't want to go there. The story as we understood it is that when she came to work for Roddenberry, he found out that she'd written a successful screenplay for Ben Casey, Dr. Showback Hospital, Showback in the day. And he gave her an opportunity, basically a challenge. They opened the production Bible for Star Trek, tells you what everybody's supposed to do in the TV show and what the characters represent and so forth. And included was a list of story ideas that Gene had developed. He wanted someone to write them up, and so he gave her this idea. And the story came out and was produced as Charlie X. It was an enigmatic teen boy rescued from planetary catastrophe.
Well, but if I may, here's the creepy part. Charlie X starred Robert Walker.
Yes.
Robert Walker died today.
That's right. He did die today.
Robert Walker Jr. died today.
Yes.
Wow.
Superlative job done by the actor.
Right. Yes.
And that's what he's known for, is this. It was the second episode of Star Trek ever, was Charlie X.
Yes.
Robert Walker Jr. died today at the age of 79, the same week as DC Fontana, who wrote the episode.
Yes.
Man, we're three nerdy guys.
Yeah, what does it mean? What does it mean? It's interesting to me that this plot is, they're trying to manage an explosive, immature person. Remember that Star Trek grew out of the same creative atmosphere of, again, see, things go out of my mind. The Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. And you may remember an episode in that called the It's a Good Life that starred a young Billy Mumy who would go on to star in another space show that wasn't as good.
Lost in Space.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And what happened? What did he do? What happened? What did that character do in that episode?
He had the ability to do, he could think something and make it happen. So he had control. The whole town was terrified of him. They had to be nice to him because if they weren't, out they went.
Mr. Science is hanging around. Bruce Curtis is here. We're talking about DC Fontana. She died earlier this week at the age of 80. She was one of the first women to break the glass ceiling and write for TV, specifically science fiction and Westerns. She was also into Westerns. But the only job she could get in the beginning was secretary or office assistant. And because she met Gene Roddenberry, he gave her the chance to break through and write. Now, so I think my favorite episode of Star Trek is City on the Edge of Forever.
Ah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay. And based on the teleplay by Harlan Ellison.
Yeah, and here's the other Harlan Ellison link. He wrote the screenplay. This is considered the most popular episode. I like it, but I liked Journey to Babel a little bit better. Still love them all. Wonderful. Here we find out that this cantankerous guy, he'd won 8 Hugo Awards, science fiction awards, in his career. Harlan Ellison, irascible, cantankerous. He'd been married 5 times. Famously, he got fired from Disney. He was a staff writer there. And somebody heard him talking about what it would be like to make a porn with Disney characters in it. That got back to Roy Disney, then it got back to Walt. And so they fired the guy, and I understood that anybody remotely connected with that was shown the door. Anyway, what went on is he wrote this story, and then Roddenberry says to D.C. Fontana and his other assistant, Gene Kuhn, we need you to rework the story. It's not working for us. We'd like to just to tweak it a little bit, which they did, and I think did very well. Well, Ellison saw the results and came unglued.
Well, there's a book out now called City on the Edge of Forever by Harlan Ellison, where he gives you his original script, and you can compare it to the final shooting script for Star Trek. And he takes you behind the scenes. And he's not a very nice, he's a very talented writer, but he's not a particularly nice guy. So D.C. Fontana did one of the drafts of City on the Edge of Forever.
Rewrote it, edited it, which is what she did professionally before and after Roddenberry's acquaintance.
All right, we're getting far behind here. We've got Bruce Curtis, Mr. Science as well. Just talking for a little bit about D.C. Fontana, a woman screenwriter who died earlier this week. We'll come back and chat a little bit more, then the jingle bells will join us at the bottom of the hour. We're live, we're local. This is the Dave Congleton Show. You have landed on the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. Bottom of the hour, it's California Headline News. Dan, get ready. The jingle bells will be here. Donna Jones, Linda Wilson, Terry Kahn, get us in the mood for the holidays. We're back with Bruce Curtis, Mr. Science, also hanging out. Just talking for a little bit about D.C. Fontana. The name probably doesn't mean much to most of you. But Dorothy Fontana was one of the first women to break into writing for a regular TV series, primetime drama, a show with Star Trek. But in fairness, Bruce, she went on and did a whole bunch of other shows.
A lot of shows. She did Dallas. She did the Next Generation pilot episode, which she co-wrote with Roddenberry. It was a feature-length production, a decent script, I thought. As you know, Bonanza had mentioned that. She originally met Roddenberry when he was doing Lieutenant. It was a cop show.
Which had Leonard Nimoy in it.
Yes.
That's how he met Leonard Nimoy.
Yes. And she gets the credit, as we were discussing, for bringing into Spock's character some nuance, some depth, some actual opportunity to put his chops into.
He was ready to quit before that because it was the logic only got so far in his character, everything logical. So bringing in having a half human side, the conflict made for a much better character.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. I was enjoying the idea that The City on the Edge of Forever was such a well written, nuanced script.
That's the one where they go back to the 1930s and he falls in love with Joan Collins.
Correct.
That's right. This great big dead civilization. And they find this thing that is enigmatic, and whether it's a machine or it's human. This script was so nuanced, so emotionally in touch, they actually managed to pry out of Shatner a very nuanced performance. he gets criticized for overacting. I don't agree with that criticism, but I like it. Well, a lot of people say that. I like energy and enthusiasm. I don't think it's synonymous with bad acting. But I like the fact this produced a nuanced characterization of the role in that, where he falls in love with the victim, the person who has to die to set the course of history back where it needed to be.
Right. And DC Fontana ended up writing TV up until 2006.
Yes.
Was her last script. So she wrote until she was about my age.
Yes, and that doesn't include some of the other things she wrote. Like Shatner, she got into the novelization of Star Trek. She'd written a couple of books, got a Hugo nomination for one of her Star Trek books.
She's won a couple of awards. Deadline Hollywood wrote about her passing, and there was a whole page of comments. I remember one, I guess she taught a class somewhere, and the guy said that every Christmas, I always got a Christmas card from her. She never forgot me. Mm. So not only was Dorothy Fontana an accomplished writer, she was also a dedicated teacher, always trying to encourage future writers to follow in her footsteps.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something I stand by. Teaching our children what it means to write and to create a story. Storytelling is what made Star Trek successful. Storytelling is what Hollywood's all about. I think it's been forgotten.
And because it was fresh then, they were using new ideas. Now a lot of it just repeats the same old themes, but that was blazing territory then.
Well, to me, Star Wars is becoming like Star Wars. It's just so many. There's Star Trek this and Star Wars that, mm-hmm. and it makes my head spin.
And there's so many other great writers out there. I've been enjoying a guy named David Weber and his stuff. I'd love to see other authors go in to have movie and TV scripts.
Craig?
Well, you're wrong on Shatner overacting. He doesn't overact. Captain Kirk is a very intense person. So that's why it was
modeled on Horatio Hornblower, which was a great character.
Well, the movies were.
His passion.
Nicholas Meyer was the one that brought in the Hornblower stuff.
Actually, when I read The Making of Star Trek, which was back in the 70s, they pointed out the Hornblower. I think it was an idea maybe Roddenberry had in the background.
Hmm.
And my favorite episode is Balance of Terror. That's the one where they introduce the Romulans. It's like a submarine movie. It's very intense.
Very well done.
The Romulan is also played by
Mark Leonard. Yes.
Who played Spock's father.
Yep. And, of course, Space Seed, which is the one where we're introduced into Khan.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, yes.
I love Ricardo Montalban.
The great Ricardo Montalban.
He was amazing.
One of the best actors.
The Wrath of Khan.
Yes. Mm. Well, that was the sequel to Space Seed.
Yeah, Wrath Khan and Farmer John. No, wait.
Thank you.
It is a shame that she has passed. Nobody lives forever, but I think that she represents a great deal of creative talent that leaves a great, great loss, a great absence. I wish that she could stay with us forever. That talented a storyteller she was. And
what's the impact of Gene Roddenberry?
Why he created this weird and strange this cultural phenomenon that we call Star Trek? I don't know. You can't underestimate it, but again, Gene Roddenberry has made mistakes when he's tried to do new shows. In fact, there's quite a bit of controversy surrounding The Next Generation. He was gently but forcefully ousted from the production of that show because...
It happens.
He wasn't... Yeah.
Mr. Curtis, thank you. Mr. Science, thank you.
Thank you.
That's a pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
News, traffic, weather. This is Hometown Radio. All right, Craig, thank you.